hands. Eventually, he managed to grip it like a dagger and held the paper steady with his free hand while he scrawled unsteady ideograms. It looked like a child's first efforts, and he was embarrassed. Perhaps Magnusson didn't know what passed for neat handwriting in an alien system. He pushed the paper back across the desk to her and watched her frowning at the shapes, eyes scanning.
"These are all staples, are they?"
she asked. "Anything exotic?"
"No, just basic grains and fruits."
"What do you feed your livestock?"
She was trying to be sociable by chatting about irrelevant nonsense to him. Humans always assumed other species shared their social conventions.
"The same grain,"
Jule said, wishing she would get to the point and simply threaten him.
"I'm trying to keep this simple for you."
Magnusson folded the paper and put it in her pocket.
"Do you have children?"
"Of course."
"They'll be missing you."
"No, they won't. No Sangeli is allowed to know who his father is."
"I'd heard that. So it's true?"
"Yes."
"But you miss them. You know who they are, I assume. If someone didn't manage the bloodlines, you'd be very inbred."
"We have not spent enough time with them to miss them, nor been parted from them long enough."
If she thought she could put pressure on him that way, then she had more to learn about Sangeli than he'd thought.
"Now, either tell me what you want from me, or leave me in peace."
Magnusson didn't appear offended. Jules knew what to watch for in human faces now. They were a mass of signals, and all could be learned. She looked over her shoulder at the guard, then stood up, collecting the files and sheets of paper again, and Jules wondered why she'd brought them with her if she'd decided not to make use of them.
"I must learn to read their language. That's essential if I'm to get out of here."
Escape had to be his sole focus now. He'd take everything else as it came. His next step would be to work out the geography, to understand where he was and what other facilities were here. He got up and went over to the window again, watching for signs of activity. The land outside was rolling grassland, but new low-rise prefabricated buildings were springing up, and he could hear the occasional hum of vehicles. The humans were making Trevelyan their own. He heard the door open behind him. He didn't turn.
"Actually, Jule, the most useful thing you can do for me right now is just to be yourself,"
Magnusson said.
"You don't have to tell me anything. Although it would be great if you had jamming frequencies for Sangeli air defenses and the command codes. But we've got Huragok who can deal with all that. We've even got some that the Forerunners left here to look after the place. Imagine it. Knowledge from the time of the gods."
The door closed again, and Jules tried to make sense of the encounter. Magnusson was working up to something, or perhaps she was simply not very good at her job. Humans didn't kill incompetent inferiors, so they multiplied. It was a miracle they could achieve so much. But they had Huragok now. They could be as stupid and lazy as they wished and still have the military advantage over Sangelios.
"Huragok left here by the Forerunners. A race that could build stars. That kind of knowledge is too dangerous to fall into human hands."
Jules didn't believe in divine plans, but he did believe in seizing advantages. Who was best placed to stop humans exploiting the Huragok to wipe out the Sangeli? It was him. He was here. He was in the heart of the enemy camp, breathing their air, knowing their intent and their capability. In fact, he was in the very best place that a warrior could be to save his people. His plans needed to change a little. He would start with the Huragok.
Admiral's Inspection, UNSC Infinity, Command Bridge.
There were already 300 personnel working in Infinity, and she still felt like a ghost ship. Barangoski thought of all the families back home who never asked where their loved ones had been for the past 6 months. They'd learned not to. Many of the crew didn't have families, of course. They were from colony worlds, now wiped off the charts, reduced to glass. And we'll never let that happen again. We'll reclaim those worlds, and we'll hold them. She reached for pastry, watching Hood having one of those very quiet nose-to-nose boys' chats with Del Rio. She kept an eye on the officers coming and going, too. It was a very junior staff, considering that this was the UNSC's flagship. Barangoski racked her brains to think of any of Del Rio's key officers, other than Lasky, who were above the rank of lieutenant, and came up empty. Rank wasn't any gauge of effectiveness or combat experience, though. It told her more about bottlenecks in the rank structure and the lack of ships to promote people to than the caliber of the crews. That, and the sheer number of people we lost. Barangoski felt bullish, rather than defiant, for the first time in years. The scent of new upholstery, adhesive, and that hot radiator smell of components being run up to operating temperature for the first time was a fragrance she wished she could bottle. It had been a very long time indeed since she'd served in a warship. She recalled her first ship as if it was last week. UNSC Lutyens. Broke my heart when she went for scrap. You could truly love a ship. She was glad she hadn't forgotten how that felt, but she was here to work, to evaluate, to spot the cracks, and she was letting nostalgia and sugar get the better of her. Her datapad vibrated gently in her pocket. There was only one caller it could be. What have you got for me, BB? It was the AI's fragment in the Bravo 6 system, not his matrix. We've now had contact from the Arbiter. He sent a message to Hood's office that the official escort has misplaced Phillips. I just happened to fall over it before it was read. Well done. Still no sign of him or your other fragment, then? No. And the explosion was linked to an attack in Ontom by Jirulhane, still working on Sangelios. We didn't see that one coming. Thank you for the heads up, BB. I may have to get things moving myself.